This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 12, 2015. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Thank you very much for being here. Sorry to begin a little bit late. The open session for Thursday, February 12, 2015 will now come to order. Before we get started, we have some late submitted documents. Perhaps we could have a motion, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the following. Agenda document number 15-10-A, which is draft A with respect to advisory opinion 2014-20. Agenda document number 15-10-B, which is draft B for that same advisory opinion. Agenda document 15-09-A regarding advisory opinion 2014-21. And agenda document number 15-07-B, which relates to the Walsh audit that we'll be considering.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. Are there any questions, comments? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Okay, thank you very much. For everybody's information, Commissioner Hunter is unavailable today, but she has indicated that she will submit her votes at the end of the day. Thank you. And item one is minutes, the approval of the minutes of January 15th, 2015. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of the minutes for January 15th, 2015, as set forth in agenda document number 15-08-B.
Okay. Any questions, comments? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Do you need me to give you the numbers of the votes?
No.
Does that help you?
I think I have it.
All right. Thank
you. If I have a question, I will let you know.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. All right. The item number two is draft advisory opinion 2014-20, a discussion of Make Your Laws PAC, Inc. However, at the request of the requester... Oh, you're ready? Oh, okay. All right. Then please come forward. Sai from President and Treasurer of Make Your Laws PAC.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Nice to see you again.
Likewise.
Thank you.
And if I may correct one error that I made during the discussion of the Bitcoin AI, I want to give my thanks to Jessica Sankoff, Bob Knopp, Theo Lutz, and Rachel Provencher, who were very much helpful in this AO and the Bitcoin AO, which was quite complex. And I think Bob Knopp and Jessica Salenkoff deserve special credit for that one, for all their feedback.
Thank you. We really appreciate that. And for those of you who aren't aware, Sai was here yesterday at the hearing and again here today, but we appreciate it. It certainly was complex, and we also give them a lot of credit for all the work they've done. So thank you very much. With regard to this matter, I understand that there was an additional comment that was submitted yesterday, and I would like to, I know we have here, let's see.
I can summarize it briefly if you like.
Your comment. Well, let me move first to the Office of General Counsel, and we have with us Rachel Provencher and Amy Rothstein of the Office of General Counsel. And Rachel, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Ravel, and good morning, Commissioners. Would you like for me to discuss the comment?
I would appreciate a discussion of the comment to begin with, to see whether or not there's some concern about us discussing the matter today.
Yep. The requester has posed a question that is potentially complicated, and OGC would need some more time to look into the matter before advising the Commission.
Okay, so you think that that additional question is going to require us to have additional time. Sir, given that fact, we would need for you to agree to an extension of time, given
An extension is no problem.
Okay.
I think there are some differences between the two drafts as it is that we could discuss today that I don't think are particularly affected by the clarifications we raise, but no problem.
If what's the will of the commission, would you like to have a discussion on the two drafts, Mr. Vice Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that having a presentation from counsel and a brief discussion would not be a problem. And it sounds like we will need to have a little bit more thinking go into it, so we couldn't reach a decision today. But
that's perfectly
fine. I don't think there's any harm in kicking that off.
Okay, and especially since you're here today.
I unfortunately won't be able to attend in person
in the next meeting. Well, then, absolutely. So, Ms. Preventure, could you go forward with your presentation?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Chair Ravel. And good morning again, Commissioners. Agenda documents 15-10-A and 15-10-B contain two draft responses to an advisory opinion request by Make Your Laws PAC. Make Your Laws PAC is a political committee that asks whether it may accept the assignment of intellectual property resulting from unpaid volunteer services performed by foreign nationals. Both drafts conclude that the requester may accept uncompensated services from foreign national volunteers because the proposed act is a volunteer service and the commission has consistently applied the volunteer services exception to foreign national volunteers. The drafts differ, however, in that draft A considers whether coding a website is a permissible activity under commission regulations for volunteer service, internet services, and equipment usage. Draft B also supersedes a 1981 advisory opinion in which the commission concluded that a foreign national artist was prohibited from creating an original piece of artwork for a committee's use and fundraising. The commission received no comments on the request and received one comment from the requester on the drafts. Additionally, if the commission approves a response, we request authority to make technical and conforming changes.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions by the commissioners of counsel? Vice Chair.
I would just, this comment came in a little bit late, so I was, especially after yesterday's hearing, which had taken a lot of of our mental and maybe even physical energy, I had not had a chance to focus on the comment to the extent that I would have liked. Perhaps you could just explain
certainly
kind of your perspective and your comments back from us regarding the two drafts.
Absolutely. I submitted the comments 2 days ago, but I forgot to copy it to AO at FEC. So my apologies for that.
No problem.
The comment that I submitted previously was fairly simple. It just addresses a couple issues raised in one in both of the drafts and one in draft A that were unclear in our request. Both of the drafts at page 3, I think, footnote 4, say that they are not addressing the applicability of new 52 U.S. Code 30121A1A, where it applies to non-federal activity. We were not clear in the request that we do intend to engage in non-federal activity, and so if we're going to use the same logo and so forth, we need to use it everywhere.
Okay.
Draft A also wasn't clear entirely on whether we would be using the same IP offline, and we do intend to do so, of course. We operate mainly online, but you know, we may be doing mailings or TV or whatever else. And if we're to have IP, it kind of needs to be wholly in the clear that we own it, we can use it wherever, we're allowed to use whatever, so that it doesn't encumber future use, because we wouldn't be able to accept services that basically taint some part of our code or our logos or whatever from used somewhere else. That said, that doesn't affect the differences between the two drafts. As between the two drafts, I think there's sort of two issues. 1981-51 is an AO. I haven't seen the actual request, just the opinion. But my understanding is that an artist wanted to make some actual like physical paintings for a committee, give them to the committee, and the committee would then reproduce them and sell them or something like that. I should also say we have no opinion per se on a policy matter of foreign nationals whatsoever, just if they're going to be contributing services, we need to be able to have the IP. So with regard to that, I guess I would make the analogy to the Elton John, Hillary Clinton murr, where suppose Elton John were a performance painter and all other facts were the same, and the committee flew him over, they paid for his brushes and ink and canvas and whatnot, and all he did was paint the thing. Would they own the resulting object? That is perhaps implied in whether the commission wants to overturn that AO. It's not implied in our request necessarily, but it may be a consideration. We have no particular opinion on which way that should go, though I would point out that there's not that much difference between someone using the committee's resources to make a painting, and that's all in the clear, or they're using, you know, their own equipment that they use normally for all other things. It's not any special thing. And them doing basically the same thing in Photoshop. You know, it's a painting either way. I don't see that big of a difference, as long as the committee pays for anything that's particular to that. I guess perhaps a more similar analogy in the Elton John one is, suppose that Hillary Clinton's campaign had recorded the concert, paid for the recording, and was assigned the IP in that recording, and then like sold an album. That's perhaps more analogous, because then you would just be talking about, you know, the intellectual property rights and the right to reuse that. As regarding the internet usage thing, we do intend to have all the services that are made to be made online. I'm not particularly expecting to have someone like come in and paint a gouache for us or whatever that was in 1981. So all the services I do expect to be performed online, but of course they would be used offline. And I do think that if a third party paid a coder to code for us, then that would be a contribution from the third party to us. And I think the key thing, of course, is the fact that it's a volunteer service where the volunteer is not expending any particular funds to make the service. They're not contributing something of value. They might be using their laptop or whatever that they normally have, but they're not being compensated for it, unusually. And I guess that's where I would draw the distinction. It's not exactly along the same lines as the difference between the two drafts in our preference. Naturally, I think that the fact that we're open source does contribute significantly to the fact that it really should be exempt. It's provided for free, it's freely collaborative online, and I think that does squarely fall within the volunteer internet activity exemption. If someone's coding or if someone's commenting online, to be honest, text is text. And if they're doing it for free and no one's paying them to do it, that's exempt. So I guess that's my only comments on the difference between these two drafts. and the comments that we submitted, we'd just like to make sure it's protected so that we can use it in state or local activity, and we can use it if we like print out a flyer and mail it to people or whatever else we do with it. We can't have a logo or other or code or whatnot that's tainted in some way that we can't use for all our activities.
Thanks for that clarification. And it sounds like with the additional issues that have been raised, that our Office of General Counsel is going to take a closer look at that, and we'll be able to address this next time.
Okay. Are there, Commissioner Weintraub?
I just wanted to float an additional issue, and happy to hear any comments that you have on it. But one thing that's been troubling me is the notion of distinguishing between tangible and intangible intellectual property versus, you know, a physical thing. I mean, as you know, intellectual property has real value. You know, the logo on the back of my phone, that's a really valuable thing to the folks that own the rights to that. You know, the Nike Swish, you know, you can come up with any number of examples of really valuable. Yeah, that's what they call it.
Swoosh.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Swoosh. My apologies. Apologies to Nike.
So embarrassing.
I'm sure that's a
you're maligning well. Their trademark.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to. Swoosh. Sorry. These things have real value. People litigate over them. People,
oh, yeah.
You know, yeah, you know. You know, if you try and use any of the Disney characters in something, you know, Disney will come after you. I mean, the fact that it's not necessarily a physical thing, the intellectual property rights are still something that is very valuable. So I have some concerns about drawing this distinction and saying, well, because it's intangible, we don't have to worry about that as a property right that's being conveyed here. So I'm not sure that I'm satisfied with actually either draft, because it really, you know, and to go to your example, I think there might be a distinction between a concert performance and conveying the rights to sell the album, because I'm not sure there are intellectual property rights in the performance at the time of the performance, as opposed to capturing it on a DVD or something, on a CD, and reproducing it and selling it. So I'd be, you know, and how that interacts with the open source. I mean, maybe some of this is because it's open source. The value of it is that it's free. It's free to everybody. So maybe that's not a problem. I'm not sure if that captures the logo, the value of the logo, though. What I've been thinking about is an analysis that would, in order to be most faithful to our previous line of authorities, that would continue to exempt the volunteer services of the foreign nationals, but to the extent that there are property rights conveyed, I think perhaps some compensation might need to be made for that. And, you know, I don't know what your logo probably wouldn't be worth quite as much as the Nike Swoosh.
I rather doubt that.
So, you know, it might not involve an inordinate payment, but in my view, I think perhaps some payment would have to be made for the property rights themselves. But I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on that.
Certainly, and I think your point is well made. I would not contest that intellectual property has value, and I am no IP lawyer, so I won't comment on whether a live performance has IP rights. I do not know the answer to that question.
Neither do I.
However, I would point out a few distinctions. So for one, if I'm pretty sure that whoever designed that Apple logo got compensated.
One would hope.
And its value derives from the fact that it's used commercially. By definition, we are non-commercial. We are a nonprofit organization. None of the stuff we do is commercial. Secondly, I would say that I made the analogies for the Elton John recording. They're not perfect analogies. I made them just as ways that the commission could perhaps grapple with the question between the two drafts of this 1981-51 AO and whether to override that. I don't think that the commission would need to decide that, say, a recording of Elton John's concert has to be permissible to approve our AO. I would say that they're distinguishable in a fairly simple way, which is that the services rendered that we're requesting, in order for us to use the service per se, it's sort of inextricably bound up with the IP in the service. If someone designs a logo for us, it is not, it would be very irresponsible for us to not take the copyright in that logo so that we can enforce copyright, trademark, so that we can say, look, this is our TV ad or whatever. I think it in order for us to use the service, and the service is clearly permissible, we must have also the IP to that service. And that's not necessarily the case for the service in creating an album, for instance. So there's a distinguishability there.
But couldn't the painter say the same thing? In order for me to donate my services as a painter, they've got to be able to use the painting.
Yes, and if someone is designing a logo for us, they are painting, I guess, in Photoshop. So I think to that extent, yes, though there's a distinction to be made between we're not selling our logo, obviously. We're not going to be selling reproductions of, some painting. It's
right,
possible we might
Apple
sell shirts.
Apple doesn't sell the logo itself. It sells things that have the logo on it.
And we may sell shirts with our logo on it. And I think that would be clearly permissible. I think there might be a distinction where, our logo is so sort of part of the activity of the committee. It's sort of part of the identity of the committee. There's a difference between that and, if Elton John were to record an album for us, not likely, but and then selling that, that's not really like an integral part of our operations. It would be a separate kind of thing. And I think there could be a distinguishing factor made there between something that's sort of intrinsic to the operations of the committee and something that is sort of this external thing that's contributed, that's being contributed for the purpose of sale, basically. None of the things that we have asked about would be contributed for the purposes of sale. They're just part of our operations. Commissioner Weintraub, you also mentioned the fact that we're open source. I do think that is a significant factor. Anyone is free, other than logos. Obviously, we need to protect trademark. But anyone can look at our source code on GitHub. It's up there right now. Anyone can copy it, and anyone can use it if they want, if they abide by the open source license that we have. In order to enforce that license, we need to own all of the copyright in that work, because there are limits. It's a fairly generous license, but it's not complete. I think that does make a distinction between, we're not taking something just to sell a lot of it. We're taking it to operate, to run our website, which is one of the things that's specifically mentioned, I think, in draft A as, part of the explicitly sort of exempt parts. It's, you know, we just want to run an open source website, and it's a practical matter for us. We're not looking to make a lot of money selling CDs.
No, I get that, but I don't think that solves the problem, because if somebody, if a foreign national wanted to donate furniture for your office, and you said, well, I'm not going to be selling any of this furniture, I'm just going to use it in my operations, it would still be clearly prohibited.
Right. Yeah, that's an in-kind contribution.
Right, exactly. So that's my point. The fact that you are using it in your operations, that's not the distinguishing factor, I think.
Agreed. To the extent that we would be talking about in-kind contributions, obviously not. You know, virtually all in-kind contributions probably are part of operations. But if we're talking about just IP, you know, there's, are we accepting it so that we can make money off of it? No, we're accepting it so that we can run our website, so that we can maintain the code, so that we can have a logo that we can use wherever, so that, you know, maybe we can improve the copy on.
I hear what you're saying. I'm not. That part of the argument is not persuasive to me, that you're just using it in your operations. The fact that it's somehow intrinsically linked with the provision of the services itself, I think that is something that I have been thinking about, and I will continue to think about, since we're not going to vote on it today. But I think that may be a more persuasive argument to me.
And that is sort of the reason that we brought this request, is someone can perform these services. I think that's uncontested. But practically speaking, you know, for me to authorize us using those services, the result of those services on our website, we have to own the IP.
And even for the coding, because I don't know enough about open source or about coding to
I'm happy
really
to answer any
know
questions.
This, but. Yeah. But even though it's open source, it still requires a license?
Open source, so there, open source refers to sort of two different things. Open source per se just means that the source is open to inspection. And that is true. If you go to github.com/makeyourlaws, you will see all of our source code. And anyone can look at it. Now, we could say you can look at it, but you can't take it. So it would be open source, but not open license. And there's some stuff that's not in that repository, which relates to security or NDA or whatever. Then there's also open license, which we also do have. We use two licenses. One is the MIT license, and one is the Afro GNU public license. They both basically have the commonality that you can reuse any of the stuff that's licensed, which is basically everything except for our trademarks related bits, so long as you in turn share that code and any improvements you make to it under the same terms. And the Afro license differs from the general GNU public license or GPL, only that it applies to if you're running it on your server or something, as opposed to distributing it through CDs. It's just sort of a technicality of when you have to apply it. But basically, if you want to use our code, you can, but then you have to have your versions open license under the same terms as well, and share your improvements, and then we get to use your improvements as well.
Okay. But there's no payment for the use?
No, it is free.
Okay.
If you operate within the license.
Thanks.
Commissioner Walther, do you have a question?
Just a little bit on that exactly. The open source is an important factor, it seems to me, but I don't really understand, what all that means, because open source sounds to me, well, anybody can use it, so this makes this decision a lot easier. But it is you get a peep at what it's all about, and then you can't do anything with it without then going back to you and getting a license to use it, and then maybe would you pay them for the license to use it at that point?
Is it just not quite?
For one thing, is it just giving them the knowledge? Okay, that's open source too, but then giving them the ability to use it, change it, sell it. Then how's that work?
Yeah, so that's
your system.
The second part is the open source license. So giving them the knowledge is just putting it out there, and you can say, here, look, this is the code we're running. The license is a preemptive license to anyone who wants to use it, freely available. If you comply with the terms of the license, you can use the code. If you want to use the code outside of the terms of the license, then you would have to negotiate something. But if you're within the terms of the license, then that just means you share whatever improvements you make equally under the same terms. There's no payment at all, and you can, and you don't have to ask permission. Even it's preemptively allowed.
Okay, so somebody has the source code, and that's code A, mm-hmm. and then they embellish it and improve it, and it's say call it the approved one B.
Then they have to share that just the way we did.
And then can they sell B?
They can sell it, but it would be hard to sell something that other people can use for free. So you're saying that they cannot sell a license to
it. So if they embellish it and that has a lot of value because it makes it a lot better,
they must share their improvements for free under the same terms.
Same.
They can sell like CDs of it. You know, various Linux distributions do so, and they're all open source, open license. But yeah, that's sort of the whole point is of what's called a copyleft sort of licensing scheme. Is on the one hand, it's free to use, and you can reuse it if you want. But the catch is, if you improve it, you gotta share your improvements just like we shared ours.
Okay. Commissioner?
Not at this time.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much, Cy. That was really very helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we will continue it till, well, or you'll just talk to them about, okay. We'll figure out what you need to do
enough
to process it. And I do want to mention that this week is Rachel Provenzer's last week at the commission. She was a presidential management fellow, and I had the pleasure of getting to know you. And we really appreciate all the work that you've done for the commission. It's been great to have you. I know you are passionate about campaign finance law, so we hope to see you again. Either before us or with us at some point, but thank you very much for all your work, and we appreciate you working on this issue as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And all right. I would request to appear at any future meeting on this remotely and have some time to view a few future drafts so that we can submit any comments.
And we appreciate that. We are all very glad to actually see you in the flesh, though.
As am I. Thank you.
So thank you. All right. The next item number 3, is draft advisory opinion 2014-21, Cambria Health Solutions, Inc. And we have with us Joanna Waldstreicher and Robert Knopp of the Office of General Counsel. And could you please make a presentation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Avil. And I believe we also have counsel for the requester here.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were standing up. Please come forward. Good morning. And could you please state your name,
sure,
for the commission?
Sure. My name is William Miner on behalf of Cambia Health Solutions.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Miner.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good
morning, commissioners. Agenda document 1509A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by Cambia Health Solutions, Inc. Cambia is a health insurance company that does business under licensing agreements with Blue Cross Blue Shield and also engages in both insurance and other types of business not using the Blue Cross Blue Shield marks. Since its inception, Cambia's SSF has been considered affiliated with the SSF of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. The request asks whether, due to significant changes in Cambia's business relationship with Blue Cross Blue Shield since Cambia's SSF was established, the two SSFs may no longer be considered affiliated. The draft concludes, based on an analysis of the 10 factors set forth in 11 CFR 100.5G, as well as the overall relationship between Cambia and Blue Cross Blue Shield, that the two SSFs are no longer affiliated. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft. And if the draft is approved, OGC requests authority to make any technical and conforming changes that are needed. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the, or comments by the members of the commission? Okay. Thank you. Is there a motion?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move approval of draft advisory opinion 2014-21 as set forth in agenda document number 15-09-A, and that we authorize the Office of General Counsel to make any technical and conforming changes necessary.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Okay. All those voting no, please signify by saying no. That would be me. No. Thank you. So
I'm going to change my vote to no. Sorry, I was thinking of the other.
Ah, okay. all right. We'll the votes are then 3-2, and that would be Commissioner Goodman, Vice Chair Peterson, Commissioner Weintraub voting yes, Ravel and Walter voting no, and we are still awaiting the vote from Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one comment on this. This is consistent with the previous AO that we issued in very similar circumstances, and obviously we should be consistent from one to the next. One factor that was particularly persuasive to me was the lack of overlap in the contribution patterns. I mean, it doesn't look like these are groups that are trying to double their contribution limit, basically, by having them two groups supporting the same candidate when there used to be one limit for those contributions. So I found that to be a particularly persuasive factor. But as I said, it's in line with the previous AO that we had issued to another Blue Cross, former affiliate of Blue Cross Blue Shield. So that's why I voted the way I did.
We appreciate your comment. My concern with respect to this is that the two entities are still very deeply financially intertwined in a way that I think was factually distinct from the previous AO, and for that reason, it does not seem to me to fit within our designation about how it could be distinct. So, but we will await Commissioner Hunter's vote for an ultimate determination in this matter.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming forward. Item number 4 is Audit Division recommendation on Republican Party of Orange County. And there's a memorandum from Chief Compliance Officer in Audit Division dated January 20th, 2015. And we have with us Robert Morcom, Zazuna Passios, Kendrick Smith of the Audit Division, and more.
Good morning, Commissioners. Before you today is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum, ADRM, on the Republican Party of Orange County Federal, RPOC. This memorandum contains four findings. Finding 1, misstatement of financial activity. The audit staff recommends the Commission find that RPOC misstated its financial activity for calendar year 2009. Finding 2, reporting of debts and obligations. The audit staff recommends that the Commission find that RPOC failed to disclose debts and obligations of $60,296 in its reports. Finding 3, record keeping for employees. The audit staff recommends that the Commission find that RPOC did not maintain monthly payroll logs totaling $187,281 as required to document the percentage of time each employee spent on federal election activity. Finding four, use of Levin funds. The audit staff recommends that the commission find that RPOC improperly spent $73,465 on voter registration activities using Levin funds transferred from the California Republican Party. This finding was subject to an audit hearing on November 20th, 2014. We're happy to answer any questions on these matters.
Thank you. Is there a question? Commissioner Goodman.
I have a question about page 11 of the proposed audit, top of the page. There's a sentence there, second first full sentence. RPOC stated that for the 2010-2011 election cycle. I was confused by that.
2009-10. Correct.
That should be 9, 10?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That's part of it then. The other part I had was it said that they represented that some of this activity occurred outside the 120-day period. I understand there was some confusion between type 1 and type 2, but assuming it's type 1, there's a 120-day period. They made that. Do we have evidence that all of it occurred within 120 days?
For the items on finding four, yes. They did do some things outside of it during 2009, but that's not identified in finding four.
Okay, so you've already there was more money, in other words? So
the Levin money in finding four was the only money that we're addressing. They did do something in 2009, but it has nothing to do with the Levin activity.
Oh, okay. So you're confident that the full $73,465 was devoted was spent for voter registration activity within the 120-day window?
Yes.
No doubt about that?
Yes.
Okay. And do you have any context of the voting registration activity? I mean, what do we know at a granular level of there? Because there are incidental exemptions, you know, for FEA 1. So do we know anything about the nature of the voter registration activity, or do we just know it was voter registration?
The exact specifics, they did hire two companies, but other than that, they were hired. It's a bounty system. They were hired to go out, and every person you registered per the bounty, Operation Bounty Identified, that's what you would get reimbursed for.
Okay. So you're confident that this was this was bona fide voter registration activity, was not incidental in any way to any other political activity?
Correct.
Okay. Those were my questions.
Okay. Thank you. Are there other questions by other commissioners? Is there a motion? Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we would ask to hold this one over. There were some issues that I know that the Commissioner Hunter had that we had not had resolved since she isn't able to be here. So, Mr. Backer, I apologize for causing you to wait a few more weeks, but we would ask to hold this over until the next meeting, at which point we can resolve those and vote this one out.
Okay, of course. Commissioner Hunter's not able to ask her questions now, so we'll hold this matter over. Thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation. The next matter is Audit Division Recommendation, item number 5. Memorandum on the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, A12-04. And we have Rakita Morecambe. Thank you. Welcome. And Mr. Smith of the Audit Division. Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. It consists of a finding for a misstatement of receipts and disbursements in 2011 and 2012. And record keeping for employees. And we are ready to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Vice Chair Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. we're going to ultimately get to an agreement here, and we'll have a series of motions. That there's in finding two, there's the record keeping issue. It's one that we've addressed a number of times before. This is consistent with our respective positions going forward. But I just note that that's the reason why we'll need to go through this this series of motions.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
Okay, we're ready for motions. Motion one, in A12-04, Democratic Party of Wisconsin, I move approval of the recommendation for finding one, misstatement of financial activity as set forth in agenda document number 15-06-A.
Okay, any questions, comments about the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Can you give me a minute, please?
Okay. So far, there are three aye votes.
Could you repeat the motion, please?
Yeah, this is finding one. This is not the this one doesn't present the contract worker issue.
That's what I thought. That's why I'm a little confused by my colleague's vote. Could you repeat the motion?
I would be happy to. In A12-04, Democratic Party of Wisconsin, I move approval of the recommendation for finding one, misstatement of financial activity, as set forth in agenda document number 15-06-A.
Okay.
I thought we were in agreement
Should
on that.
Should we? Yes. Yes. So we'll...
Just a little confusion.
Could you recall
okay.
the vote, please?
So let's do a redo of that vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. That's 5-2. We are waiting for Commissioner Hunter's vote.
They so thought that it was a swish instead of a swoosh.
Passes. we never confuse the swoosh for a motion one.
Okay, motion two, which does reflect the ongoing dispute over contract workers. And
I'll
whether
save you
be.
My state and local party speech.
Thank you. in A12-04, Democratic Party of Wisconsin, I move approval of the recommendation for finding two, record-keeping, as set forth in agenda document number 15-06A, subject to an amendment to include the $323,279 paid to contract workers.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No.
Okay. Vote is 3-2, awaiting Commissioner Hunter's entry of her vote at the end of the day. And I'm so glad.
Now we've got a problem because Hunter is not here. Commissioner
right.
Hunter is
so
not
I
here.
Think in Commissioner Hunter's absence, you can declare the motion to have failed by the present vote of 3-2 and proceed forward.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
That's good because we don't want to. I'm so glad you're making this motion now instead of
so
me.
So I can go ahead with the third motion
yes.
now, despite the
All
fact
right.
that...
Can I take just one break real quick?
It's because it's not going to pass, right?
The motion's not going to pass. You can declare the status of the motion by the votes present.
Right. 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 Under any circumstances.
We're reasonably confident the result isn't going to change.
No. You're right. But I just wanted to clarify.
It's 3-2. Even if she votes, she might vote for
it. Yeah, that's the problem.
No, we did that the other day.
Madam Chair, just to clarify, whenever a member is absent, the vote as recorded by the members present is, quote unquote, final.
Okay.
So it passes or fails on the vote at the table. The Commission's procedural rule, Directive 10, mm-hmm. does provide a process for members that are absent to request that their vote be recorded the same day. But the vote at the table is official as called by the chair pending.
Okay.
That.
Which then enables...
The next
vote.
Which enables the next...
But what
next
would motion. Happen if... I don't anticipate this will happen in this case, but theoretically, if she entered her vote later and it wasn't what we anticipate, she had this, you know, moment of revelation and decided to vote with us on this. What, how?
The result could change. And so in any instance in which it is thought that an absent commissioner's vote might change the outcome, the commission might want to consider whether it wishes to proceed.
But you think we're on solid ground proceeding now based on the assumption that the result's not going to change?
Yes.
Commissioner Walther.
But it concerns me a little bit that we just can't assume. Suppose she changes her mind today. I mean, we go through this procedure and we say, okay, if she doesn't change her mind, we get vote 3 and we vote that up. If she does change her mind, then, you know, all bets are off. What concerns me is that it gives the impression that somebody can't vote later in the day and it wouldn't have any effect unless we make the assumption now as to what that vote's going to be.
No, I think, Commissioner, I think it would be actually the question that Commissioner Weintraub was asking, but would be actually the opposite, where if the vote on the motion that was just made is final at 3, quote-unquote, final at 3-2,
yeah,
as announced. If Commissioner Hunter were to request unanimous consent to change her vote later today, pursuant to Directive 10, and wished to be recorded as voting in favor of the motion, then the motion would pass 4-2.
But then what would that do to the effect of the motion that I was about to make?
That is why, if you really think that there is a possibility that the motion would pass, you might be well advised to stop at this point.
Let's go a little further. If there's going to be a vote left, are you saying that for her to have a valid vote, we now have to wait? I mean, I guess what bothers me is I'm assuming, and I've assumed this before when I vote at the end of the day, if I'm not there like the other day, that I could vote to such a degree that it would have an effect. I mean, in theory, she can vote, and it would be 4-2.
I am saying that votes are cast in the commission meeting, except that there is a procedure in Directive 10 whereby an absent commissioner may, before the end of the calendar day, request consent to be recorded as having voted a particular way on a particular motion for which they are absent. And that's, I'm not going beyond that.
Okay, so we have, what would be the procedure then? If, for example, the other day and I wanted to vote, it's not a change of vote, it's a first vote. Just I want to vote, say, and you don't even say you have to tell somebody how you're going to vote. Do you have to get approval first?
You
have to get consent from whom?
From the commission, from the consent of the commission. The general procedure is that a member staff will take the motions that were voted on, and let them know of it. The commissioner who wishes to be recorded would then need to send an email to the chair, CCing the other members and the secretary, saying what they requested, how they requested to be recorded on a particular motion. And that email would have to be submitted before midnight Eastern of the actual day of the commission meeting.
So she could, we're still assuming then that she could vote and make it 4-2.
Yes.
Commissioner Goodman.
Madam Chair, we dealt with these issues a couple times last year.
Yeah,
not very long ago.
My preference is, look, I think we could probably, do we have anything else on today's agenda? Yeah, we do.
We got one more.
Are we done? I'm sorry.
No, we have one more.
One more. Why don't we see if Commissioner, why don't we hold this in abatement for just a little while and see if we can get that vote in so that we can come back to a orderly vote on the third motion later. And Commissioner Hunter's staff is trying to get in touch with her to see if we can get that vote in. I think that would be a easier way and would remove a lot of these contingencies.
One of the other ways that we actually dealt with it not very long ago, it involved, in fact, a vote by Commissioner Walther, is that the staff relayed the email request to the chair during the meeting. It was done on the record during the meeting, and that's another way to do it.
Right.
Why don't we just see if we can get that vote in?
We'll defer this until after we consider the next item. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you.
I understand Commissioner Hunter's vote is underway.
So. Oh, okay. Should we wait?
No, I'll go to the next one.
All right.
Give the secretary time
Thank
to
you.
Record it and then.
Thank you.
Best work.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. This is proposed final audit report on the Joe Walsh for Congress Committee, Inc., A13-01. And it's Jim Miller, Kendrick Smith, Susanna Pacios. From the Audit Division. Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
Likewise.
And proceed, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Commissioners, before you is the proposed final audit report on the Joe Walsh for Congress Committee Incorporated, and we're prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Very succinct. Are there any questions? Commissioners, Commissioner, questions, comments? Vice Chair Peterson.
I'll just say that I'll be prepared to make a motion. In the draft on page 13 in the final paragraph, and there's an underlined portion that starts with citing to the statement of reasons of Vice Chairman Matthew S. Peterson and Commissioners Caroline C. Hunter and Donald McGann and MERS 59, 57, and 6031, the committee to elect SECON for Congress and Hagen for Senate Committee, close paren. And then the word and after that. We would propose to, it's been requested that we delete that for purposes of this report, and we've agreed to do so. We had originally thought that might be helpful, but we understand the concerns of other commissioners on this. So I would move that we approve this subject to that deletion.
Madam Secretary, are you clear as to where the deletion begins and ends?
It would be the underlying sentences. Or the underlining.
Citing. We're going to strike citing all the way to and.
Okay, so
we're going to leave the rest of this change here.
So it reads others did not come taking the position that the existence of fluff.
Yes.
Got it.
And Mr. Vice Chairman, and we're talking about 1507-B?
Yes.
Yes.
This is
yes.
The one that we just got.
Thank you.
So, I'd be happy to actually,
make
I described
a motion.
The motion, but I'll actually be happy to now make that motion.
You got that? Okay.
Yes, I have it. Thank
All right,
you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay. And just for clarity, what I discussed with the secretaries, we're striking the edited language, the new language, from the word citing to the word and.
That's
right.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
With that
Vice Chair Peterson.
Sure.
You have a motion?
Yes. With that understanding in mind, I move approval of the proposed final audit report on the Joe Walsh for Congress Committee, Inc., A13-01, as set forth in agenda document number 15-07-B, with the including the edit, which is the deletion, discussed at the table.
Okay. Any questions? Comments with regard to that? All right. All those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 All right. That the vote is 5-0. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Has the vote? Okay. So we can go back to yes. We can go back to the previous item.
I got to get back to you.
Madam Secretary, could you? I'm sorry, Madam Chair, could you get the Secretary to report the vote on Motion 2 with the new vote in?
Yes, I will. I was just going to get that. Okay.
we had on the table motion two, and we were awaiting Commissioner Hunter's vote. Do you have the votes that were entered by Commissioner Hunter?
I understand that the email has been sent to my office, and the email will show that Commissioner Hunter voted for Commissioner Weintraub's first motion with respect to finding one, which would make it 6-0, and with respect to Commissioner Weintraub's motion on finding two, subject to the edits discussed at the table, she has voted against that, which would make the vote 3-3.
Okay. So now we'll proceed to motion three.
Excellent. In that case, thanks to all for that clarification, my third motion is in A12-04, Democratic Party of Wisconsin, I move approval of the recommendation for finding two record keeping as set forth in agenda document number 15-06-A, related to the $2,192,554 that the committee disclosed as having been paid with an allocation of federal and non-federal funds, and $28,972 that was paid from an exclusively non-federal account during periods in which the employee was also paid with federal funds. I further move that the Commission direct the Audit Division to include in the proposed final audit report an additional issues section addressing the $1,405,736 for 100% non-federal payments.
Okay. Are there any questions about the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Okay. And did Commissioner Hunter enter a vote on this?
She couldn't. It wasn't a pending motion.
It wasn't a pending motion.
But she'll
submit
it later, but it's passed.
So. All right.
Yes, there's already yes. five votes in favor.
I know that, but I was. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. That concludes the open session. We will go in. Oh, yes. Are there any management and administrative? You've never ever said one.
I could start if you'd like.
Yes.
He has from time to time.
Has
there
he?
There have occasionally been administrative or managerial matters.
Matters. All right.
today there are none.
There
consider.
Are none. There are no management and administrative matters for the record. Thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned, and we also have to, in a few minutes, go back into closed session to end the closed session. Thank you.